I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, just go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon sponsor yourself. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are continuing our end-of-the-year review that we do every beginning of each year. So we go back 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and this year we even went back 60 years. So the year 2023 just ended. So I have our guest on, Jerry Branum. Jerry was a writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine, Iron Man magazine, and he's one of the most knowledgeable people in the sport, in my opinion. And we always have a good time doing this end-of-the-year review each year. So Jerry and I have already done 1963 and 1973. So this year we are going over 1983, which was a really big year in the year of bodybuilding. So this is going to be a two-part interview to cover all the events that happened in 1983. Today we're going to talk about the amateur shows that took place in 1983. So it was pretty interesting because they had the AAU and the MPC. This was the second year where the MPC had started. The MPC started in 1982 with Lee Haney winning the MPC Nationals that year. So it continued on to two different organizations. You had the AAU and you had the MPC, and the MPC was already starting to pull ahead, as you'll see when you hear our discussion of the MPC Nationals. So on this episode, we're going to start off talking about the 1983 AAU Mr. America, which was won by one of the most impressive Mr. America winners ever, Jeff King. Jeff was only, I think, 22 years old, and he was an absolute freak in the world of bodybuilding. Incredible legs, legs that rivaled Tom Platt's, a gigantic neck, and just like one of the most muscular physiques you've ever seen. So we're going to talk in detail about that 1983 Mr. America, and then we'll talk about the 1983 NAVA Mr. Universe, which used to be probably the biggest competition in the world until the IFBB took over. So by 1983, the NAVA universe wasn't quite as big as it used to be, but it was still a pretty good competition, and you had many of the competitors from the AAU going over to the NAVA universe. So we'll talk about the amateur NAVA Mr. Universe, which was won also by Jeff King, and we'll talk about the professional version of the NAVA universe, which was won by Eduardo Kowak, who eventually went on to compete in the IFBB as a pro. And then finally, Jerry and I will talk about the very famous NPC Nationals that year, which took place in San Jose, California, the 1983 NPC Nationals. This was only the second NPC Nationals they had. In fact, this was the first time they called it the NPC Nationals, because when the NPC started the year before, 1982, they actually called it the American Bodybuilding Championships, kind of like the Mr. America. But this year, they changed the name to the MPC Nationals. And it was won by Bob Paris. And it was one of the most hotly contested heavyweight classes ever in the history of the MPC Nationals. One of the best amateur competitions, probably, in the history of bodybuilding. You had Bob Paris, you had Rory Liedemeyer, you had Mike Christian, Matt Mendenhall, Rich Gaspari. Just an incredible lineup. So we'll talk about all the weight classes from the MPC Nationals. And of course, we'll also get a lot of extra stories from Jerry. Jerry's always great for his stories and all he brings to this podcast. All right, what else is going on? We are now in the third week, or no, we're going on to the fourth week of the new year. It's going by fast, huh? I just got back from Hawaii. That's why we didn't have a show last week. I was in Maui with my parents, and I stayed out there a week. They usually stay out there for about 3 weeks. So it was great time spending some really good quality time with my parents, who are such great people. I'm very blessed to have such wonderful parents. And now living in Florida, they still live in Chicago. I don't get to spend a lot of time just sitting and talking with them. So that was really, we had some really, really good quality time together. Didn't really do much except ate a lot and slept a lot. Of course, you have that time change 5-hour difference from Florida to Maui. So I was falling asleep at 9 p.m. because that was like 2 a.m. Florida time. So it took a while to get used to that, but just had a really, really good time. Beautiful weather, of course, out there. We got some rain a few days, but great weather compared to especially the rest of the country, because I know we've been going through a cold freeze this last week in Chicago. I think it was like -4 or -10. It was absolutely crazy. So I am back, and it actually took me a few days to get over the jet lag. It's unbelievable. The time difference really makes such a difference. I could not fall asleep early, getting up late, tired, a little run down from that long flight, but it was absolutely worth it for sure. So I will probably head back to the gym tomorrow and been off the gym for a while. I only got like 2 workouts in while I was in Maui and really didn't do anything this last week because with the travel and just getting back to normal. Yeah, so I just got a couple workouts in while I was out there at the Powerhouse Gym in Maui, but just went kind of light. And so now I'm going to get back to normal and start training again and definitely hitting the diet again. Be like everybody else out there, just dieting now for the new year. But I not only put on some extra weight for Christmas, I also put it on my vacation. So looking forward to getting back to normal and hitting the gym again. I missed it. All right. We didn't get any emails from the last couple of weeks, so I don't have any emails to read. And nothing's really happening in the world of bodybuilding. We got the Arnold Classic coming up. And, man, just a little bit over a month because it'll be the first weekend in March. So that's probably only about 5 or 6 weeks away. So that'll be coming up quick. I think Samson Dauda is the front runner. He was the winner last year. And then you got Hadi Chupin going in. Of course, the former Mr. Olympia from 2022. And he got beat last year by Derek Lunsford. So I would put my money on Hadi. He's looking really, really good. But it should be a really great show. Andrew Jack was also supposed to go in it, but Andrew dropped out. So it looks like it's going to be pretty much between those two guys. We got some other good up-and-coming bodybuilders in the lineup, so maybe somebody will be out there to surprise us. I like that guy, HorseMD. That's his Instagram name. Marcelo, I think, is his real name. But he's got a great physique, so we'll see what he looks like. So this is a chance for some new guys to come up and surprise people. So I might be going out to the Arnold Classic. I'm not really sure, but I'm planning on maybe. So we'll see. All right. Well, I really don't have much for the intro, so let's get to our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1983 in review. And as I said, this will be part one, where we talk about the top amateur level shows from 1983. And then next week, we will continue our discussion of 1983 and talk about the Mr. Olympia and all the other pro events. All right, here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have my good friend Jerry Branum with us again today, and we are continuing our discussion that we do at the end of each year where we review the year in review, and so we go back 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. We already talked about 1973. We also talked about 1963 on some previous episodes. So now, Jerry, we're going to talk about the year 1983, which was a really big year in bodybuilding, a lot of stuff happening that year. And that was already 40 years ago, if you can believe it.
Amazing.
But by this point, the year before, 1982, the MPC had started. So they had their split with the AAU because for years, Weider was trying to work with the AAU to have them handle the amateur competitions. And I think for a couple of years with the Mr. America, they did kind of affiliate the AAU and the IFBB. But for some reason, they split off and the Weider organization finally decided, let's just start our own amateur organization. So they called it the MPC, the National Physique Committee, which is still going strong today, 40 years later.
Right.
The first one they had was won by Lee Haney. So this is 1983. This is the second year. And when I was looking over the Mr. America, which was the AAU, compared to the MPC Nationals, which are they're similar levels, it looked like the MPC was already a bigger organization because they had 81 competitors in their men's division, and the AAU America only had 55. So I think people were already deciding they were going to go with the MPC because they knew that was the way you get your pro card, and then eventually if you wanted to be a bodybuilder and be in the Mr. Olympia, that was the way to go.
Yeah, the AAU was already on the way out by then.
Yeah, yeah.
Although they did hold Mr. America's after that, but towards the end there, even the AAU America, it got literally no publicity.
Yeah.
Thing. I mean, the last couple of AU America, Since then, I think a couple of people have tried to resurrect the AU America.
Yeah.
Like, you never, you know, there's no photos, there's nothing.
Right.
You don't know who won. The last couple of AAU Americas that were under the AAU banner, I mean, I didn't even know who these people are. I mean, they got no publicity, nothing about them. So they won a famous title, AAU Mr. America, but it was literally worth nothing to them. They didn't even get the traditional trip. You remember years back, the guy who won the AAU America, I don't know whether it was a York company or with muscular development, they would pay their way to compete. And that's what happened with Vern Weber. Paved their way to compete in the NAB universe.
So mm-hmm.
You can get that.
Right.
The last couple of AU Americas, they got a title, but it was worth almost nothing.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, compared to the way it used to be treated.
Yeah.
I mean, was in body, when I first got in body, everybody knew who Mr. America was. I mean, he was all over the place, especially not so much in the Weider magazines, but mm-hmm. in the New York magazines, Muscular Development, Strength and Health. That constant articles.
Yeah.
It was one of the only ones who didn't was Jerry Daniels had almost no publicity. And Vern Weaver had very little publicity. But all the other guys had plenty. Joe Benda had a lot of, you know, in 62.
Yeah.
Val Vasilev in 64 had a lot of publicity. You know, so I don't know. What can I say? So
you mentioned the magazines, too. So by this point in 83, I mean, Weider had now Flex magazine.
Right.
And they also had Muscle and Fitness magazine, and those I think were probably two of the biggest magazines. But then you also had Bob Kennedy's Muscle Mag International. You still had Perry Rader's Ironman, and you also had Muscular Development, and you also had Muscle Digest. So there's a lot of magazines. So I think right. If it wasn't a Weider magazine, at least back then, and you know, 40 years ago, they would still cover the NABBA universe, or they would cover the AAU, or they would cover those WABA shows too. You know.
As a matter of fact, I actually had articles in the first two issues of the very first two issues of Flex magazine.
Oh wow! Okay. Yeah,
because the initial editor in chief of Flex was Bill Dobbins.
Yeah.
He's more well known as a photographer, but he does writing also. And he asked me to write two articles. Actually, it was a two-part article. I think it was something to do with can you be bulky yet shapely, something like that.
Yeah, I've got those issues, so I've got those articles. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, on the very first issue of Flex, it was Chris Dickerson was the cover.
Yeah, after he won the Olympia.
Holding the Olympia trophy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the AAU America first, because even though it was a smaller show, that was pretty well known that year because the winner was Jeff King. And yep. He was an outstanding bodybuilder. I remember being in Chicago, the gym I trained at was a smaller hardcore gym, but we had a lot of good like state and regional level competitors. And these guys were all going to go. Chicago, for some reason, was always really strongly AAU based. In fact, I remember even when the MPC started, it took years. We were one of the last states to really make the switch over to the MPC. I remember they were trying to get the MPC into Chicago for a while. And for some reason, they just weren't, it wasn't taking on. It took a couple of years, I think till like 85 before it really took off.
Right.
But a lot of those guys from my gym, they were going to go into the Mr. America. And I remember everybody looking at pictures of Jeff King going like, wow, this is the guy who's Mr. America. I mean, he was so phenomenal. His leg development was like Tom Platz, and he had that huge neck and that his most muscular was so freaky. You know, he was an outstanding bodybuilder.
When I first saw Jeff King, I actually never saw him in person. I never met Jeff King, but I probably would have if he would have gone into the IVB. We could talk about what happened there, but the thing is that the first thing I noticed about him was his neck.
Yeah.
I said, geez, he's got a big neck for a bodybuilder. I, you know, most of the guys had either average-sized necks, some of them even had skinny necks.
Yeah, yeah.
I had this huge, big neck. I'm thinking, is that a genetic thing, or does he actually work his neck?
I think he worked it.
Must have worked. It was very, you know. But I mean, he got a kind of a raw deal there later on.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they want him to compete again to qualify in the IFBB? Something.
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah. I did an interview with him, and he said he was doing at the time. He was doing both MPC and AAU shows.
Yeah.
But the reason he chose to do the America was he always wanted to be Mr. America. You know, he was like us, you know, and when he grew up, Mr. America was that coveted title. So he said, okay, well, if that's the show that has the Mr. America title, that's the one I'm going to do. So that's why he did it. But yeah, and then he had a very successful business as a, like, I guess as a professional, because he was doing a lot of tours in England and in Europe, not in England, but Europe, like John Brown was. And he was doing a lot of seminars and a lot of guest posing. And I think it lasted a few years. I mean, I think it lasted like 2 or 3 years. And then when he finally decided to try to come over to the IFBB, he told me that it was all set. He was going to do the 85 and Night of the Champions, and they were going to give him an invite, and he was going to go. And he was in shape, and he was, you know, dieting. And right before, they told him, it's off. You gotta go back. You got to start at the amateur level. And he said, I have too much to lose. I'm not going to give up all these seminars and all this money I'm making to try to get my pro card. You know, I'm not going to do it.
What was the reasoning for him forcing him to go back into it?
I don't know. I don't know who did it. I don't know if it was, you know, Mannion or Wayne D'Amelia or who. I think he said it might have been D'Amelia.
Doesn't make any sense. This is a guy that won the AU Mr. America. I mean, why would he need to go? That made no sense whatsoever.
No.
I mean, you certainly couldn't fault him for not having a pro level physique. He would have been right up there with those
guys. Yeah, for sure.
It's a mystery that I guess only D'Amelio, whoever did it, would have to answer that.
Yeah. They let a lot of other people come over. Like they let Bertel Fox come over, Eduardo Coac, you know, a lot of guys who were NABA winners. They let them come over, even John Brown. So
right.
I don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So in that competition, they had height classes. The AAU still did height classes. And the short class winner was a guy named Larry Bernstein. Are you familiar with him, Jerry?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Did you interview him?
Yeah, he was from Chicago. So yeah. I kind of knew of him when I was growing up. He was a little bit older than me. But kind of a shorter guy, but real good physique. I mean, good proportions, real thick, super thick.
I remember him. Yeah, I remember. And you interviewed him with, was a guy named Glenn
Kinnear, yeah.
Yeah. But I remember both of those guys. Glenn Kinnear actually won the AU America, didn't he?
Yeah, he won it in 86, so just a few years later, yeah. So I'll read a couple of the guys that Larry beat. William Hatcher, who also had a really thick physique, he was second. Al Kirsch, who was a guy from Chicago, he was third. Bob Jockowitz, who was also winning the MPC, right?
Bob Jockowitz, a good friend of mine. I knew him at Gold's Gym around that time, yeah.
Yeah. And Phil Outlaw, who was an older bodybuilder, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he was fifth. And then the medium class was won by Jesse Goutreau from Louisiana. Do you remember him?
Yeah, he had a brother also was a bodybuilder.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a good physique. Not really big, but he had the mustache.
Right.
Yeah, and he was really good symmetry and always in hard condition.
Yeah.
And then Bob Reese was second. Remember Bob Reese, Bob Reese. Yeah, he's been around forever.
I saw him a couple of times when he came out to California, yeah.
Yeah. I heard that guy was phenomenally strong. I did an interview with John Lloyd, who was Boston Lloyd's father.
Right, oh yeah, yeah.
And John ran one of the Gold Gyms in San Francisco. I think it was one of the first ones that they franchised.
Okay.
And he was there in the morning, and he said Bob Reese used to come in the morning, like, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning, and he'd be drinking chocolate milk and eating a donut. And he would go to the bench, and he would start with 2 plates, and he'd go to 3, and he'd go to 4, and, like, by himself, just pausing, and he could say you could hear the plates rattling, you know? He said this guy was a powerhouse.
Wow. Well, him eating donuts while training, that's probably set the stage for Planet Muscle, Planet Fitness.
Yeah, right.
They have, once a month, they have a donut day where they have donuts. And this is right in the gym, you know. They have a day once a month and a donut day, you know, and they just lay it out there, and the members can eat as many donuts as they want. Of course, that fits in well with the concept of fitness and health. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, what a freak. He was from Wisconsin, I think, so he was another guy from the Midwest. And real big guy. He was always in the America, or then I think he tried to go in the MPC, but it seemed like he never could get cut enough.
His problem was the muscle definition.
He got close, but he never made it. So the medium tall class was the one that Jeff King won. That was, I think, the biggest class of the night. There were 17 guys in that class. And Phil Rohde was the guy who took second. And I know Phil because he was also from Illinois.
Right.
he had a really impressive physique, very, very big guy, real massive delts.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I was younger at the time. He was obviously a few years older than me at the time, but I used to see him compete in Chicago, and he won all the big shows in Chicago. And kind of a mean-looking guy, too. Really? I think he won his class at this show like a year later. Here, let me look. No, I'm sorry, the year before when Rufus Howard won. He won his class then.
Rufus, yeah.
But he got involved, I believe, with the mob. I heard the mob killed him.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's several stories about how he died, but he died not too many years after this. He didn't live a long life.
Terrible.
Yeah. And Rick Poston was third. Remember Rick?
Sure. From Florida? Yeah. I remember him, sure.
In fact, this Mr. America took place in Tampa, Tampa, Florida. And I think Rick was from Tampa. He had a gym, and there was a lot of, I think it was a Gold's Gym, and a lot of wrestlers used to train there, you know, like Hulk Hogan and stuff, you know.
Right, right.
But Rick had great abs, remember? And his wife was competing, too. I think his wife was in the show, and she did really well in the contest, too. Debbie Poston.
I remember her, too, sure.
And then Billy Arlen was fourth. You remember Billy from Texas?
Right, sure.
And then our old friend Doug Brignoli was fifth. At this contest.
Good friend Doug.
And then the tall class, Marty Varanikar was one of the tall class. Remember Marty? He was from the East Coast, right?
Yeah. I think he's still around. I think he is.
I remember him and his brother both had great legs. They just had incredible leg development, you know?
Right.
And some of these other guys I don't really know. Steve Cavanaugh, he was a taller guy. Jeff Munson was from Chicago. He was third. Sam Pascoe was fourth, and Craig Cole was fifth.
I don't know any of those guys.
Yeah, but Jeff King was obviously the easy overall winner, so he was pretty incredible that year.
Yeah. Did he go on to compete in the NABBA Universe that year?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that next.
Okay.
So he went over to the NABBA Universe, and he won, and he beat out John Brown.
So he did win the NABBA Universe.
Yeah.
Sure of that. Okay.
And Marty Varanikar was third in the tall class.
Right.
And then some of the other guys in it. Vince Brown, who I believe was from England, he was first in the medium class. You remember him?
No, I don't recall him.
And Bob Reese was third in that contest, so he went over. And Terry Phillips won the short class.
Well, but Terry Phillips, British bodybuilder. Yeah,
he was around for many years, right, in the NABBA Universe.
That's true.
And Mike Sable, the zipper, he was second.
Oh, Mike, yeah.
And then Larry Bernstein, who won the short class at the America, was third.
Okay.
So, yeah, Jeff King did a pretty amazing, had a pretty amazing year winning the America and the Universe and then beating out John Brown.
Who won the, what about the pro division? That was the amateur, right?
Yeah, the pro was Eduardo Kowak.
Oh, my good friend Eduardo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you the story about Eduardo, you know, about when he was competing as a pro, hanging out with him. And
he went to his gym and he was eating hamburgers.
What happened? Yeah, he was competing in the Grand Prix circuit. I think this was 87. And, you know, I got real friends. We became good friends. One time he approached a bunch of the guys and he said, you know, he lived in Nice. One of the contests that time. One of the contests was being held in Cannes, France, you know, where they hold the movies.
Right. Set. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Eduardo lived in Nice, which was neighboring town. Wasn't that far away, maybe 30 minutes away.
Okay.
Went to show everybody his gym. You know, he had just opened a gym. Nobody wanted to go.
Right.
I said, I called him Ed. I said, Ed, I'll go with you. Sure. And we went over there and quite honestly, I don't know why, but I expected this kind of crappy gym with, you know, lousy equipment. And I was stunned when I walked in the gym. Beautiful, brand new equipment. I mean, everything was modern. It looked great. I met his wife, I think. And then he says to me, remember, he had a contest that night. And he says to me, yeah, are you hungry? I said, yeah, kind of, yeah. He says, let's go get a pizza.
Oh, pizza.
Yeah, but later on in another contest in what was the name of that town? I can't remember the city. Later in another contest in the same circuit, he went out in the middle of the night. We went out and had McDonald's style cheeseburgers. The next day. Now, you know, we shared this large cheese pizza there in Nice. And I kept saying, Eduardo, are you sure this is okay? I mean, you're going to compete like 8 hours away. I mean, aren't you afraid of water, all the sodium and all that? He says, I'll be all right. I'll tell you, John, people don't realize what an amazing specimen Eduardo Kalmark was.
Yeah.
He competed. He didn't have a drop of water retention. His abs are thick. I mean, he looked great.
Wow.
I think he actually won the NABBA Universe. I forget whether it was 4 or 5 times. I don't remember.
I was looking at it now. He won it 4 times.
4 times. He actually equaled Bill Pearl.
Right. And Arnold.
Yeah, and Arnold. I mean, this is a guy, for some strange reason, though, he never did well in the IFEB.
I was going to ask you, why do you think that was? Because I always had a great physique.
I witnessed him competing, like I say, and he was right up there.
Yeah.
He had no weak points. He had calves. He had back. His arms are great. Super thick legs, except the only thing I could think of, he wasn't ripped.
Okay.
Some of the other guys were ripped. So, and I don't think it was because he ate the pizza before. It wouldn't make him, you know. It's just that he was in great shape, had great abs, but he didn't have the ultra definition that some of these other guys had. I think that's what, you know, kept him down. You know, I guess.
Do you think he was more ripped when he was winning the NABBA Universe?
He was a little bit more cut when he was winning the
NABBA. Yeah, because when I saw pictures and videos from that, I mean, he looked really ripped in those shows.
Yeah, I think that maybe he tried to gain a little more size to compete as a pro with the IFBB, and it might have hurt him a little bit as far as muscle.
He had those freaky abs, like an 8-pack. Yeah.
Really great abs. I mean, I think I asked him what he did for his abs. I don't know whether he said he trained him or not.
Probably didn't.
You know, a lot of the guys who had great abs, like another example of this was Milo Sarchev.
Yeah.
I remember interviewing him once when he was competing in the Night of the Champions. And I said, you know, Milos, your abs are particularly impressive. You must work them like crazy. And I thought he'd say, well, I do this, I do that. He says, I don't do anything for abs. He says, I work them 4 days before the contest. The rest of the guys, I never do a single sit-up or leg raise.
Unbelievable.
You know, you got to sit back and think, what about all these guys that are training, like Frank Zane telling people to do 1,000 reps of abs?
Yeah, he used to do abs every day.
All these people working their abs like crazy, and here's these guys not even doing a sit-up or leg raise, and had better abs than the guys who are knocking themselves out.
Right. Didn't Surgeon Bray used to train his abs a lot, though?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
You would think these guys that got the really deep abs would train them hard because that's the only way you could get that kind of deep separation, right?
Right. Well, I remember Mike Mentzer, what he used to do is he used to do a type of sit-up. He'd hook his legs under the bench. It's kind of – you remember that Roman chair thing?
Yeah.
Lean back and do sit-ups like that. Because
he told me that, because
you know, Mike wasn't a believer in doing high reps for abs like a lot of – he felt that you should train your abs – like any other muscle, you know, right. Your muscles once or twice a week, you do your abs once or twice a week. So he did 1 or 2 sets with this type of sit up. And I remember him holding like a 100-pound plate.
Jeez.
Very heavy weights when he did those. And you know, that's what he did. I mean, Mike was lucky though. He had a very narrow waist.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That really helped him, you know, that he was lucky like that.
But his stomach was sticking out a lot. And it's some of the when he would relax his abs, you know.
I'll tell you what, I think it was because of those sit-ups.
Me too, yeah, because that was before growth hormone and insulin, so it wasn't from the drugs.
You have to remember, when he did the sit-ups, he went all the way back, and, like, he stretched his abs in the back position. Mm. You know, his abs are all – remember, holding a 100-pound plate on your chest.
And
you
went
all the way back. He stretched his abs. So I think what happens is, he had abdominals. But when they relax, his abs are so stretched out.
Yeah.
They relax, it looked like a pot belly. Believe me, it wasn't fat.
No, I don't think so.
Just that stretch his abs out.
I'd be afraid of getting a hernia by doing that.
Oh, I'd be worried about the lower back because his back, I used to turn away when I'd see him do it.
Right.
I didn't even have lower back problems back then, but just, and if I did that, forget it. My lower back would go right out.
Right. Yeah, so it looks like Eduardo went over to the IFBB finally in 86.
He did? Oh, Eduardo, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, finally.
The story I told you took place in 87.
Yeah.
So that'd be about right. You know, it's a shame that he never won a IFBB pro title after winning so many NABBA Universes, you know?
Yeah, he was so highly regarded as a NABBA Universe winner. I remember he was almost like a legend, you know, because he would win year after year.
Yeah, and I was really very sad when I heard he just dropped dead of a heart attack.
It was a heart attack?
Yeah, he was in his late 40s, something like 48.
Wow.
Yeah, I just was very sad. And he's such a nice guy. Just a really sweet guy. Like, you couldn't help but like this guy. He took a photo with my mother once at the night of the gym.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just a really, one of the nicest guys I've ever met in bodybuilding. A really nice guy.
He passed away a long time ago, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yeah.
Ian Lawrence was second. Remember Ian?
Yeah, English guy.
Yeah, kind of short.
Yeah, thick abs. Another guy with thick abs. Kind of blocky physique, but thick abs. You know, muscular, but not really aesthetic looking.
Right. Yeah, Ian won the Universe back in 75, so this was quite a few years later. He was still competing in the pros.
Right, that's right.
And Rufus Howard, who won the America the year before, he was in third place.
Yeah, Rufus Howard, he was always an enigma to me because I'd see him at Gold's Gym. You know, he was training, and he'd say hello to you if you said hello to him, but he always, like, he kind of reminded me of Dave Johns, personality-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Very low key, not nasty or but he'd be friendly if you're talking, but he kind of kept to himself.
Yeah,
he did his workout and left. You know, he didn't talk to anyone. You know, but you know, he was pretty good. You know, I remember he was tall, he was about 6'1", 6'6".
Yeah, big guy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you know, that was a Rufus, another guy who didn't get a lot of publicity.
Yeah, he really didn't do. I mean, the America was like his big. Thing, you know, he never won the NABBA Universe. Looks like he went in it for many years after that, but this was the closest he came when he got, he got second in 82, the year he won the America.
Right.
And then it looks like he went over to the pro in 83, which was weird because he never won the amateur.
Yeah.
And, Bill Richardson was fourth and Bob Jockowitz was fifth. Isn't that weird that he was in the America? And he didn't win his class. And then he goes over to the Universe and he goes into the pro Universe instead of the amateur. That's kind of weird.
Can't explain that.
Yeah. Let's see. Some of these other national level shows. The AAU junior Mr. USA winner that year was Quincy Roberts.
Quincy Roberts, yeah.
And the AAU junior Mr. America winner was Michael McKinley, who he never really went on and did anything big.
That guy I never heard of, no.
But the AAU Mr. USA winner was J.J. Marsh. So J.J. was competing. He started off competing in the AAU before he went over to the MPC, and then he had better success with the MPC because he eventually turned pro.
Yeah, J.J. was a nice guy, very cocky. You know,
I heard that about him.
Nice guy, you know, very cocky. I remember he competed, I think it might have been the Arnold show one year,
mm-hmm.
interviewing him in his hotel room. I don't know. It was... He was sitting there interviewing, and his girlfriend was like sitting a little bit away, and he would kind of like snap his ego like this, and she'd bring him like coffee, whatever, you know. She already, I said, geez, what kind of relationship is this?
Yeah.
I didn't say anything, you know, but that for some reason stands out in my mind.
Yeah, he ended up having a really good physique, though. He had really good legs and really good back.
Right.
He won the Ironman Pro in 91, the second year they had it.
Yeah. Yep. I do remember him, sure.
All right, let's talk about the MPC, because that was a great MPC Nationals, one of the best, I think, in the history of the MPC Nationals. It was held in San Jose, California. The promoter was Paul Love.
I was at that one.
You were at that one, okay.
I wasn't covering it for the magazines, but I went there.
Okay, good.
Went there with, I don't remember whether he was competing or not. I can't remember. But I went there with two friends of mine. One of them, a guy you might have heard of named Jeep Swenson.
Oh, yeah, the big guy, yeah, who died of a heart attack. A
couple of movies in Batman and, you know,
yeah.
Where you sometimes worked as a wrestler.
Yeah.
can't remember whether he competed or we just went up there. I don't remember. But I went up with him and another friend of mine. We went up to the contest, you know. And I'll tell you a funny story about that show. Bob Parris won, you know, which we'll mm-hmm. talk about in a second. But, you know, Bob Parris had not – I don't think he had come out as gay yet.
No, I think it was until 88.
But everybody in bodybuilding knew that he was gay.
You know? Oh, really? Okay.
We all knew. Everybody knew. You know, but he didn't actually, I guess the expression is coming out of the whatever. And we after the prejudging, everybody went to a local restaurant in San Jose. And I was sitting with Artie Zeller and a couple of other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Across the couple of tables away, Bob was sitting with his a blonde guy. I think his name was Rod. I can't remember his name. Who he later wound up marrying after he came out. He married this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting together, very good-looking guys. You know, remember, Bob was in great shape, dark tan, handsome guy.
Yeah, the night of the show, yeah. He couldn't look better on that day.
The guy, his boyfriend, was a blonde guy. He was a male model.
So okay.
Also a very handsome guy, right? With a good build, too.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around the room, and I said to Artie, check this out. I said, every woman in the room is staring at Rod and Bob. Look at them, they're all looking at them. I mean, they're practically in heat looking at these two guys.
Right.
I said, isn't it funny that they, you know, neither one of those guys would have anything to do with any of these women, and yet they're frothing at the mouth because these guys are good looking. We got to laugh about that, you know?
How were they able to keep that secret for so long? Because there's just magazines, right? No social media or anything, so.
You know, it's a good question. I don't know, but like I say, everyone in bodybuilding knew that Bob was gay.
Yeah.
He just didn't come out with it publicly.
And you would never know it by reading the magazines, but.
Oh, no, you wouldn't know by reading the mag. And, you know, Bob, you know, you couldn't tell that he was homosexual by talking to the guy.
Yeah.
He was a very intelligent guy. He went on to write a couple of books.
Yeah.
I interviewed him a couple of times. There was no indication. You know, I'm not saying that gay guys wear shirts that are pink or anything, you know, nothing like that. But I'm trying to say he seemed like a masculine guy.
Yeah.
He didn't give any type of gay aura, let's put it that way. Neither did his boyfriend, the blonde guy, also seemed like a masculine guy. You'd never know these guys were gay.
Yeah. Well, I remember Bob always dressed really nice. He always spoke really well. He didn't dress like a typical bodybuilder. He was a model, you know.
Yeah, he'd wear suits and ties. I mean, the guy was a classy guy.
Yeah.
You know? Like I say, he had a brain. He was smart.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very interesting to talk to. I mean, I remember interviewing him, and I cracked a couple of jokes, as I always do, and he didn't seem to care for that. I mean.
What was the joke? You remember?
I don't remember what it was, but it was kind of like the same deal I had with Steve Reeves.
Right.
I told you the story when I said a joke to Reeves. He just stared at me. Well, Bob did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because some people have compared his physique to Steve Reeves.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say that because he was called the modern day Steve Reeves, and
yeah, good.
He really did look a lot like Steve because he was tall like Steve, and he had good leg development like Steve had, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know this about Bob Parris is that Bob, one of his original mentors, was a guy he competed against. Might have been at that show. You'll have to check and remind.
He was Rory Liedermeyer. Yeah,
Rory Liedermeyer was his original bodybuilding mentor. They used to train together.
Right. I read that in Bob's book.
Now, I knew Rory pretty well. We still communicate through Facebook. He's still in great shape, by the way.
Yeah, he still trains really hard.
Right. And the thing I once said to Rory, I said, because he trained John something or other. Was it John?
John Arneda.
He trained him too. And, you know, when I started to, you know, when I was covering all the bodybuilding shows, I noticed the pattern. I knew who Rory was training. I knew who the bodybuilders he worked with. And I noticed the pattern. When all of these guys, including Bob Parris, when they turned to the side, including, of course, Rory himself, they had extraordinary leg bicep development.
Hmm.
It almost became like a signature. And I remember saying to Rory, I said, you know, I can always tell the guys you work with because all of them have great leg bicep development. He says, yeah, he says, you know, we train the leg biceps hard because so many guys are deficient in that muscle.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of what he was telling me, sir, I was thinking of another guy who I knew, Cal Scalic.
Yeah.
Cal Scalic looked like his leg bicep had been surgically removed. His thighs weren't that bad from the front, but he had no leg bicep at all. Nothing.
Yeah. Wow.
Nothing there at all. But all those other guys, you know. So
I remember reading Rory's routines because there was a lot of articles written by him. He was really popular.
Yeah.
And he would do like a lot of sets. Like he would take one body part, like just your bicep, your leg biceps. Right. He would do like six exercises. He wouldn't do one or two. You know,
right.
Like he would do like four exercises for the side part of your shoulders.
Right. No, that's, you know? that is exactly true. And
yeah.
That's it with the leg. That's why those guys had such great, they didn't do like two sets of leg curls like a lot of other guys.
Yeah.
He's got higher. I think he told me that they did it and devoted an entire workout to just
the leg biceps.
That's how many sets.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it wasn't overtraining because all of them, every one of his guys had great leg biceps. So whatever they did, worked.
Yeah, he was really extreme. I remember, like, he would bulk up really big in the off season, right? Because I remember, like, he would go to shows in the off season. People would see him, and they'd always put his picture in the magazines because, like, look at the size of Rory Leader. He's like almost 300 pounds. He was huge, you know.
Close to 300 pounds. But Rory had a great bodybuilding structure. If you see him in person,
oh yeah, great structure.
He had a naturally small waist, which always helps a bodybuilder. You know
that.
And, you know, he had great abs when he was in shape. He had those great deltoids. A lot of people refer to Rory Liedermeyer as an uncrowned Mr. America because they felt that he could have won the title. And if Bob had been there at that 83 contest, since I was there, I can tell you this, Rory would have won, I believe.
Yeah.
I think for sure he would have won.
Now, did you go to the pre-judging and night show, Jerry, or just the night show?
I think what happened at the pre-judging, I think I was – I wasn't there because me's cheap and another guy, we hooked up with a famous, I don't want to embarrass her if she's still alive. We hooked up with a very well-known female judge. She judged the female contest and she was, I didn't actually do it. One of the other guys started talking to her. I won't tell you the details, but we all spent that during the pre-show. We were all together in a hotel room. But the thing is,
this sounds like an interesting story.
Yeah, I remember saying before that incident, because she used to always dress very sexy. She used to wear all these tight clothes and stuff, and she had a nice body. She trained herself.
Okay.
You know, she was always, you know, very close to the female competitor. And I remember I was covering a contest once, and I said to one of the other guys, I said, you know, so and so. I think she's a lesbian, you know. I mean, look at her. Look at how she's always has a hugging these other girls and this and that. And you know, and she says, well, what about her sexy? She's always wearing tight pants. I said, that's to put people off. Let me tell you something, John. After that morning, I realized that she was far from a lesbian. She was not a lesbian. As a matter of fact, they had the next time I came up across her, they had a 30th or 35th anniversary party at Gold's Gym for the 35th anniversary. And she was there. And she said, I said, hey, nice to see you again, you know. And she says, you remember that day in San Jose? I said, sure. I said, how could I forget? And she just laughed and walked away. We talked for a couple of minutes and walked away, you know. But what I understand, she went on to be some, you know, realist. She was very, very pretty. Very, very good looking woman, you know, but that's why we missed them.
Because <Okay. laughs> I was reading a report of the Nationals, and I always thought, you know, just from seeing it I saw the video and I saw the pictures in the magazines, and I thought Rory could have won.
Oh, yeah.
Bob looked really good, but I thought Rory had a little more thickness and fullness to his physique, you know, in the chest and shoulders, you know.
Well, to be honest with you, when I saw the contest, I had Rory winning myself.
Yeah.
I was there. I mean, it was close because, well, you know,
one of the reports said that at the prejudging he was holding a little water, so maybe that was why he lost.
Yeah, that could be. I didn't see the pre, but I can tell you, you see, it was so close because, you know, I mean, Bob had that great aesthetic physique, and Rory was muscular and great shape.
Yeah.
But not only that, but both men were terrific posers. Both men were great posers. Both of them really posers. I don't know whether Rory taught Bob or I don't know Bob, whether Bob did it, but they were really excellent posers. So, you know, it was really, I mean, if you had to separate them by points,
yeah,
I think it's maybe 1 to 2 points between them.
It was a 2-point difference, I think, in the final score.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, having been, I can tell you. Because, I mean, like I said, I kind of leaned a little towards Rory, you know, that night.
Well, you mentioned his routine. I thought his routine that night was outstanding. I mean,
fantastic.
Yeah. The reception he got from the crowd, I don't know if people were standing up. I couldn't see the audience. But, man, it looked like a standing ovation.
Oh, it was. I mean, I thought he won. When I saw that, I said he got it. Rory's going to win.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, I'm sure you've seen this. A lot of times, the way the crowd reacts actually influences the judges. It should.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen it many, many times when I've covered bodybuilding contests. Good example was Larry Scott. I hate to go back in the past again.
Yeah.
66 Mr. Olympia, which I also attended.
Yeah.
And I put the story. You know, when Larry came out, they announced his name, and it was like 10 minutes go by, and there's nothing. And suddenly the spotlight goes on, and they're slowly walking across the stage. There's Larry Scott, and the way the light hit him, it looked like his hair was platinum colored. I still remember this. Slowly, and I'm telling you, John, and I said this to Larry Scott himself years later. I said, in all the contests, in all the years I've been in bodybuilding, I've never seen a reception like you got at the Brooklyn Academy of Music that night. I'm telling you, for 20 minutes, Lou Ferrigno was there too.
Yeah.
Minutes, the audience was on their feet, screaming and applauding throughout his whole and of course, my buddy Harold Poole was his chief competitor. Now, Harold, you know, was living in New York. He got a good amount of audience reception, but it was nothing compared to Larry.
And yeah.
And even as a kid, I was a teenager, I said to myself, there's no way Harold's going to win.
Right. They can't.
Larry, I hate to use it, they literally brought the house down.
Yeah.
I'm sure the judges would probably feel they'd be a riot if they didn't give it to Larry.
Yeah, yeah.
But to this day, I think we talked about this. I mean, you could say that maybe I'm not objective because Harold was a friend of mine. And I didn't know Larry Scott from Adam back then. But I did know Harold Poole. I still feel to this day that Harold should have won because Harold, you know, Larry was great. I mean, his arms and shoulders were unbeatable at the time. Still one of the best in bodybuilding history, but Harold had a more complete physique,
mm-hmm.
a much better back. He had better legs. You know, the body, you know, he was a little bit soft, but you know, the overall, but Larry wasn't ripped either.
Right.
So, and Harold was a little taller. If you really judge objectively, Harold, again, it would have been a close contest. Harold, to me, should have gotten the edge.
Yeah.
Even if I didn't know Harold.
Yeah.
So that was it. But, you know, this getting back to Bob and Rory, it was equally, I mean, it was like I say, I thought Rory won. I was a little surprised. But then again, you know, like I said, Bob looked fantastic. I mean, he had a head-to-toe body, great calf.
Yeah.
Can't fault the guy. You can't say, well, you know, this guy has no bit. Like, there's many contests where you've seen a guy win and you scratch your head and say, how did this guy win?
It's like
Harry Johnson.
And yeah.
1959 AU Mr. America. The guys who placed second through fifth were all better than him.
Right.
All of them.
Right.
You know, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. I remember that routine that Rory did. Like you said, Bob was good too, but Rory's was so, it wasn't like technically perfect. Like he was like moving a little weird sometimes between the poses, but he was so into the music. It was so emotional and the crowd picked up on that. And the reaction from the crowd was amazing. It's one of the best routines I've ever seen because it gets you like emotionally moved, you know, when you watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I say, the audience went crazy.
Yeah. I see that's just lacking so much today. I mean, I don't see people involved in their posing like that, that are just so in tune with the music. And man, you could just feel the passion when he was doing that routine. It was amazing.
Well, even though he wasn't as passionate, if you think back, my friend Sean Ray also used to get into the, that was one of his little traits. When Sean posed, he you know, whatever song he'd be playing, he'd be lip syncing in a song.
Yeah.
Posing, and he's posing directly in tune with the music. So, like you said, I totally agree. You don't see that anymore.
No.
Guys don't do that, you know.
And it was amazing, like you said, with Rory, to hear the audience's reaction when he did connect to the music and he was feeling it. They pick up on that, you know. They can pick up on that vibration, you know, and it's just.
Plus the
physical. I get goosebumps when I watch. I've watched that routine a million times on video, and I still get goosebumps when I watch it.
Yeah, I'm sure that when you play the routine with this video, I'm sure that people will definitely see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Rory was...
it almost brings tears to my eyes because I'm like, God, bodybuilding used to be so great in the 80s. It's gone.
It's sad.
Yeah, it's sad. It is.
I mean, it's probably why I was a bodybuilding, not just involved as a writer, but I really was kind of... I was a fan of bodybuilding.
Yeah. Yep.
I have to really be honest, and I don't get me wrong. I still train. I don't call myself a bodybuilder because to me, a bodybuilder is somebody who's trying to get big and is competitive. I'm just a guy trying to keep in shape right now. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, the actual bodybuilding contest. I almost hate to say this. I don't have a great interest in them anymore. And Richard Baldwin said the same thing. My friend Richard Baldwin.
Yeah.
And I think it had a lot to do. It's not just the different physiques we see, John. I mean, it's just that the showmanship is not there.
Yeah.
It's just not there. I mean, it's boring. A lot of
it is. It is boring.
I mean, it's just plain boring.
Yeah.
A couple of guys like Rory or Bob, I think I probably would be much more interested to
do it.
Because there's some creativity involved. You know,
well, also, when you had the Nationals back then, it was like when the show was coming up, it was like everybody kind of knew who the top guys were going to be. It was almost like the Olympia. Like everybody knew who the top five guys were, you know. So they knew Rory was going in it. They knew Bob was going in it. And then Mike Christian, who was third, he won, I think, the Mr. California that year. And he looked fantastic too, right?
It was in fantastic shape. Mike was always in I don't recall seeing – let me think. I don't recall ever seeing Mike Christian – out of shape. And
Me neither. He's always ripped.
Always in shape. Not once did he enter when you'd say to him, wow, Mike looks noticeably off.
Yeah.
You know, like you could say about that 90 Olympia we talked about, you know, where they tested for drugs.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys were not in their best shape and you could see it.
Right.
Mike Christian was always in shape.
Always, yeah.
He's still in great shape. He's in his what?
Yeah, he is.
I don't know whether he's in the 60s or late 60s or something like that.
Yeah, he's older than Lee Haney, so, yeah.
I mean, I've seen some pictures of Mike. Is he in Texas? I don't know. I think
I think he's in Texas, yeah.
The guy is still in great shape.
Yeah.
Still a great guy, Mike.
Great guy. That was what was so crazy about him back then was he, like, kind of had the muscularity or the conditioning of a lightweight, but he was a heavyweight.
No, I know. Amazing.
Yeah.
He was tall also.
Yeah. Remember how mad he was when he got third place in that show?
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
He was going to walk off stage.
Yeah, I do remember that. I remember looking. Because Mike was, you know, he was a nice guy, a great guy. But remember, he used to be a gang leader.
Yeah.
And he had a little underlying violence in his personality.
Yeah, yeah.
Him get mad at people, and it's scary.
Yeah.
Face looks, and he. Not, luckily, nothing happened. Like I'd see him get arguments with some of the competitors, you know, on some of the tours I went on, you know, Europe.
Yeah.
But I look at him and I'm thinking, Jesus, is this the old gangbanger coming out?
Yeah.
Luckily, nothing happened, but
yeah,
he had a look on his face that was scary when he got angry at somebody.
Yeah. He was a very emotional guy. Like when he was up, he was up, and then when he was down, he was down. You know.
That's right. Yeah.
Because I seen him like win contests, and man, he was the happiest guy in the world, you know.
Up in the air.
Yeah. And then when he lost, he was like so disappointed. You know, he would take it very hard.
Because he did train hard. Mike was very dead, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they just, it depends. Some guys just, if they convince themselves that they're going to win and they don't, it's like a house falling on them. It just can't handle it emotionally.
Well, that show was so tough because between him, Bob, and Rory, I mean, I think they're all 2 points apart. I mean, somebody's going to have to take third out of the three. You know, I mean, it was so close.
Any one of those guys could have won. Mike could have won.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if Rory was a little bit off, if Bob, let's say, held a little water in him, Mike walked away with the title.
Mike did win the next year, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then Matt Mendenhall was fourth, and he was second the year before? Yeah, the year before when Haney won, he was second. So he was probably the favorite. But I think he was living in California at the time, and what I read in the magazines was his wife caught the flu, and then he caught the flu from her because obviously they're sleeping together. And then he lost weight, and he didn't look his best. He looked like he lost weight. He looked smaller.
He looked much smaller, and but he was a little bit also not really ripped also. But, you know, Matt Mendenhall is another guy who they always talked about could have been probably one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the photos of Matt Mendenhall never really do the guy justice. You had to see this guy in person. His calves were gigantic and huge. And he had huge forearms, a small, tight waist.
Great legs.
Broad shoulders, big back. In fact, you know the famous statement that Lee Haney made?
Yeah.
I don't know after the 82 show or when, but he said that Matt Mendenhall was the most genetically gifted bodybuilder ever, which is a big statement coming from a guy who won the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, think about guys like Sergio Oliva, who's another genetic freak, and then, you know, for Lee to say that about Matt says a lot.
Yeah.
Shows how good Matt really. But to see Matt is a guy, I mean, I got to know Matt pretty well. He's a very nice guy. I think he passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Chiropractor, moved back to East somewhere. Very nice guy. You know, we used to talk all the time. But see, Matt, to me, never really was 100% confident of himself.
Mm.
Which I don't think yet that you ever saw the full possibilities of Matt Mendenhall. I don't think he ever really reached 100% of his peak. But whatever inner demons he had, he never really gave it his all. If he had, it would have been, I don't know who could have beaten him, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, I don't think even Rory or Bob Parris could have beaten this guy.
Right.
He put it together and really got peaked to 100% with his structure, his size, his lack of weak points. I don't see anybody beating this guy.
Yeah.
That's how good he, but he never really got that look. He was better at some time, like in 82, like you say, he was better than he was in 83.
Yeah.
But I don't think he ever really reached 100% of his peak. I really don't.
He looked better the next year in 84 because it was close between him and Mike Christian.
Right.
He wasn't as ripped as Mike, so Mike beat him.
Yeah, that's a problem that Matt had. He never really got real.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it had to be hard for the judges. I mean, I know if I was judging, I would have had a hard time putting him second because he was so proportionate and he had so much muscle size and the symmetry. He was like, everything was perfect, just was lacking that little bit of definition. And then when you got somebody like Gary Strydom, the year he beat him in 86, because Gary was ripped, but he had no back.
No back.
And, I mean, he couldn't compare to the beautiful physique of Mendenhall, and Mendenhall was close. But he wasn't that ripped.
Yeah.
It's just like, God, how do you put that guy second? You know, it's just such a perfect physique, you know?
Gary was another example of a guy who, I mean, like you say, his back, I remember him getting ready when he was making a comeback a couple of years ago. He was going to compete in a pro show in Colorado, if I remember correctly. And he took off his shirt in Gold's Gym and he started posing. And he had these little accolade guys in the gym that, you know, kept up them all the time, you know.
Yeah.
He's following him around the gym, you know, and they would say, unbelievable, oh, wow, Gary, nobody's like this. And I'm standing away looking, you know, because I knew Gary pretty well. And then he turned to the back, and I'm thinking, he's not going to win anything. He's got no back.
Right, right.
Not only did he have he didn't have any thickness, he didn't have any width.
I mean, yeah, it was really weird. He had a weird physique.
It looked like a guy who didn't train his back.
Right.
And I tried to figure that out. I said, you know, he had those gigantic deltoids and he had the pecs, and he, from the front, he looked great.
Yeah, great.
Then one day I watched him train back, and I think I realized why his back was like that, because he would train it heavy. He'd like do one arm dumbbell rows. He'd go halfway up. Never contracted. In other words, any exercise he did for back, the upper back where you have all the definition, it wasn't contracting. Like partial movements.
Yeah.
You know, Gary was kind of a, you know, a nice guy, but he's not the kind of guy you can go up to and suggest things to because he'd get pissed off at you. He said, who the hell are you to tell me? I'm the national, and you're telling me how to train, you know.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I would have. I would say, Gary, did you ever think of maybe doing fuller movements, you know?
I did.
Mr. Olympia, but don't listen to me, you know. But I wouldn't say that to the guy because I was telling, you know.
Well, fifth that year at the heavyweight class in the Nationals was Rich Gaspari, who was only 20 years old.
Rich, another guy who became good friends with Rich,
very
muscular.
So I want to tell you a little, I mean, I'm sure you heard this, but there's a little backstory to that Nationals. So Rich was from New Jersey. And he won the junior nationals that year at 20 years old. He was, I think he was 205 in the contest.
Right.
He had like a Tom Platz physique, gigantic legs, kind of blocky, just so much. Well, they actually compared him to like Tim Belknap.
Right.
They said he was like so much dense, heavy, thick muscle, and he was ripped. And he walked over everybody at the junior nationals. He beat David Hawk.
Right.
Then he goes to the Nationals and he goes in as a heavyweight. He's only like 205. He's up against taller, bigger guys like, you know, Mendenhall, Mike Christian, Rory, and Bob. So you remember the guy named Jeff Williams?
Yes, black guy, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story about Jeff Williams when you finish your story. Go ahead.
Okay. So I remember him because he was in Weeders magazine all the time and they were comparing him to Arnold. They said he's going to be like the next Arnold.
Right.
And they had, like, here's Jeff Williams' back routine. Here's Jeff Williams' arm routine. And he was incredible. He got an unbelievable physique.
Great physique. Great physique.
So I don't think he was in it in 82, but 83 was, like, he won some other contest in California, the Gold Cup or something.
Yeah.
And then they were really promoting him heavy. I remember he was in some magazines. And then he was in Weider's magazine a lot. So he was kind of one of the favorites. So I guess the story I heard was he goes into after the prejudging, he knew he wasn't going to win. He knew it was going
to. Talking about Gaspari or Williams?
Williams.
Hey, go ahead.
So he knew the top three was going to be Bob, Rory, and Mike. And he was expecting to win.
Okay.
So after the prejudging, he went to SeaWorld, which was in San Jose. He just said, fuck it. I'm going to SeaWorld. So he didn't even go to the night show. So Gaspari was in sixth place. And then he moved up to fifth because Jeff Williams went to SeaWorld.
Oh.
So what's interesting is it shows you how things can happen, you know, how fate can step in.
That's true.
Rich is living in New Jersey, but because he made the top five at the Nationals and he's only 20 years old, Ed Connors from Gold's Gym sees this contest and he goes up to Rich and he says, hey, why don't you come to California? He goes, you can manage one of my gyms out here. And he goes, you'll be out in the hotbed of bodybuilding and you'll make a living for yourself. You know, you might maybe be a pro bodybuilder because you got a lot of potential. Now, I wonder if Jeff Williams would have went to the contest and Rich would have got sixth if Ed Connors would have noticed him. And then maybe Rich Gaspari never would have went out to California. He never would have trained with Lee Haney. And maybe he never would have got his pro card. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. But I'll tell you the quick story about Jeff Williams. I was training at Gold's, and I used to talk to Jeff Williams. And I remember he was doing a seated calf raise, and I was standing there talking to him between sets. And this guy, not a bodybuilder, some guy, just a regular guy in the gym, comes up to Jeff Williams, and he says, hey, how many – because, you know, Jeff was a very impressive guy, as he said.
Yeah.
He said, hey, how much steroids do you use? And I remember thinking – wrong. You don't ask a guy that question, especially when you don't know. Jeff Williams goes, who the fuck are you? Where do you come off asking me how many steroids? And I thought he was going to hit the guy.
Yeah.
Really got mad at the guy. And the guy was just literally ran away. I mean, it was a funny scene. I said, Jeff, you all right? Yeah, he laughed about it after. He says, can you believe this guy? He's coming up. No hello, nothing.
Right.
First thing he says to me is how many steroids I use.
I said, how did he look in person, Jerry?
Very impressive.
Yeah.
very full, very thick.
Just as good as his pictures?
Yeah, great arms. Yeah, he really was a great bodybuilder. Really was.
He wasn't that tall either, right?
Oh, no, he's about 5'7", maybe.
5'8", yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Medium height, yeah.
That's what I liked about him. He was like an average height, but he was so big, man.
Yeah, very thick.
I could see the comparison to Arnold in a way because he was so big and thick, you know?
Yeah, yeah, the big delts, big show, you know, very good bodybuilder.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked him. I was hoping he would turn pro and, you know, have a good career, but
yeah,
he never really did anything.
Saw him a couple of weeks later, and you know, because remember, I knew him. He was coming in the gym, and I said, "Excuse me, Jeff, can I ask you a question?" He said, "Sure, Jerry." And I said, "How many steroids?" We both had a level. Yeah, I'll never forget that, how mad he got. I thought he was going to slug the guy.
Yeah.
Jeez, how many steroids? You know, jeez.
Well, let's talk about some. Let me see if there's anybody else in the heavyweights you want to mention. Neil Spruce was eighth.
Neil, yeah. Neil went on to, he started a nutrition company.
He's very successful now.
Yeah, yeah. He wound up buying a big house. And
yeah.
He has occasional get-togethers at his house.
Yeah, that's what I had him on the show with Rick Valente last year when we did that tribute to Mike Quinn.
Yeah. Of course, I'm never invited, but let's not get into that.
I had somebody write to me an email, and they said they want a signed photo from you, Jerry.
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
They said, would you charge him? I said, well, I'll ask him. I'm doing a show with him tonight.
I would charge him if I could find him. I used to, you know, this, you know about my 8x10s. I told you that a long time ago, right?
No.
Well, when I was competing, I was competing in a beach, one of the Muscle Beach shows. Artie Zella, of course, one of the great photographers. He took the best photo of me ever taken of me as a bodybuilder. It was a side tricep. You could see it on my face.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before. Yeah.
And I
like the mustache and the black hair.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. That was 74, I think it was. I liked it so much. I went to this place in Hollywood that can make reproductions of photos.
Yeah.
And I ordered 10 8x10s of that photo because Artie had given me the original photo. So I brought the photo. I said, I'd like 10 copies of this photo. Okay. When will it be ready? In a week. I come back a week later. They hand me this big envelope, and it's got 100 of photos in there. And I said, wait a minute. I ordered 10. So then he looks back. He says, oh, your order got confused with another muscle guy named Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Arnold got... Well, ordered 100 photos and got
10.
I ordered 10 photos and got 100. So I had these photos for years, and I don't know where they're in here somewhere. I got to find them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every time, I mean, one time that one of the managers at Gold's, oh, this is a guy, oh, what's his name? Oh, God, he's actually on Facebook now. He's gotten really buff. I can't remember his name. But he was the manager at Gold's at the time, and he asked me for a photo. He says, do you have any bodybuilding photos? So I brought him, I had, you know, like still had those 100 photos.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him one of the 8x10. I said, well, what are you going to do with it? He says, we're going to put it up on the wall, you know.
Oh, wow.
I said, oh, that's great. I appreciate that. Because remember, even then I had been a member of Gold's for many years, you know.
Yeah.
I expected to see this little 8x10. And you know how most gyms have the 8x10 photos.
Yeah. Frame.
I go in the gym a week later and there's a 6-foot, he'd blown it up to 6 feet.
Holy shit.
Giant photo. And
wow.
He put it on the wall in the middle room. And John, for weeks, you know, people would come up to me and say, hey, Jerry, whose body is that you pasted your head over? At first, I used to get really pissed off. I said, that's me, you moron. I said, I wouldn't paste my head over somebody else's body.
Right.
And after it happened so many times, that I got sick of getting mad about it. So then I would say, oh, that was Rich Gaspari. He allowed me to make a joke about it. You know?
Right.
They took down the photo after a couple of years later. And I don't know what they did with it, but you know, Gold's Gym today has these big photos of people that never even trained at the gym. But me, who's been there over 50 years, no photo, but you know, I'd love for them to find that photo. I don't know whether they destroyed it or what.
Yeah, that'd be great.
put it up again. You know what I mean? Because people don't know that I competed in body. A lot of people don't know that I was a bodybuilder.
Yeah. With the first cover I ever made, I was in bodybuilding a long time. I had, you know, all these teenage shows I did, and then I was in the MPC for years, and I never even made, I might have had one or two pictures in a magazine, but, you know, nothing. And then when I won the Natural Universe, they had a natural bodybuilding magazine called Natural Physique, I think, and they put me on the cover.
Okay.
So I went out and bought like 20 copies, you know. I was so happy.
Yeah.
And I remember this girl I was dating, some guy from her church, like she brought it to the church, I think, you know, and she was showing people she knew. And some guy goes, oh, did he go to like Six Flags Amusement Park and do one of those things where they put someone else's head on a body? Oh, man, was I mad. I was so pissed, you know. I'm like, all these years of work, and I finally make it, and this guy's making a joke, you know.
I mean, you can't help being insulted by that a little
right,
bit.
Right, right. Like, I don't look like that, you know.
Sometimes it doesn't happen much now, but a couple of years ago, I'd go like in a, let's say a market somewhere, a store, and somebody would say to me, hey, did you used to work out? They used to try and figure out, what do they mean by that?
Yeah.
I mean, do they mean that I'm a fairly big guy and I stopped working out?
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't walking around with my shirt off. I mean, they couldn't tell whether I was fat or muscular.
Right.
You know? And then I realized that, you know, they thought that, I don't know, for some reason they thought I stopped working out. I never did, of course, but
right.
I also used to get a little bit. I said, no, I still work out.
Yeah.
After a while,
it doesn't bother you.
You can't get annoyed about it, you know. And sometimes I would just make a joke. I was like, yeah, I worked out 55 years ago and haven't worked out. Now, what I do is I'm in synchronized swimming now. You know?
And I'm very good. Yeah, I think if somebody would say that now, I would laugh about it. But back then, I was so sensitive about it because that was the first magazine I ever made. I thought it was a really big deal, you know, and this idiot's making a joke of it, you know.
Yeah, I remember when I was 19, I was visiting my mother in New York, and there was this girl I was interested in, and I think it was either Strength and Health or Muscular Development had come out, and I didn't know this was going to happen. There was a photo of me in there. You know, it was a photo of me taken a couple of months before in California. I was 19 years old, you know. And I was just sitting on the couch with this girl. And there was like a coffee table. I strategically put the magazine and opened it to the photo of me. And I didn't say anything, you know. I'm talking to her. And then she glances down. She goes like this. What? Is that you? I said, does it look like me? She says, yeah, that's me. I mean, her whole attitude, John, changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Attitude. Suddenly, it was all over me. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Like, oh, really? It worked.
Yeah, it worked. I mean, yeah, I still remember her name was Randy. I remember it. But she was a girl. Very pretty, very pretty. You know, but I mean, I never forget. She was impressed.
Yeah, great.
I looked pretty good in the photo, if I say so myself. I had nice abs and stuff, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. She saw you in a whole new light.
Yeah, a whole new light. Because remember, you know, I was, people who know me know I was never one of these guys, show-off guys in the gym. I always wore sweatshirts. I mean, it wasn't until like 20 years ago I started training in a T-shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, years and years, when I was in competitive bodybuilding, I always trained in a sweatsuit. Even when boiling hot, back in New York, 105 degrees humidity, I'd wear a sweatshirt.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know. I was just shy about showing what I looked like.
I
guess really when I analyzed it, I was probably afraid that somebody would say, hey, you know, your arms don't look too good. You know, in fact, I always tell people, like, the reason I don't wear shorts in the gym, even when it's warm, is because I don't like looking at my calves. You know, because I never had great calves.
Yeah.
My calves have atrophied so much that I'm afraid if I look at my calves, that I'll get to so discouraged because, you know, once you're a bodybuilder, you're always a bodybuilder. That I'll get so discouraged and disappointed that I'll lose interest in working out. So I always wear sweatpants. I never wear shorts.
Yeah.
Arnold was just the opposite, by the way. Arnold, he used to wear shorts because he wanted to see his calves.
Yeah, to motivate him to train him harder.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah.
Well, the light heavyweight class that year was also really good. Chuck Williams, that black bodybuilder, really thick, huge arms. Remember him?
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. What was the other guy who I was talking about before? The guy who got mad at the steroid question?
Jeff Williams.
Oh, I confused Jeff with Chuck.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
It was Chuck Williams that got mad.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, yeah.
Didn't that guy have an incredible body?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
I think his legs were a little behind his upper body, but man, his upper body had some, his arms were so, it looked like his biceps were like that wide, you know?
Yeah, he was very thick.
Yeah. So he won, I think, pretty much unanimously. He beat Moses Maldonado that year.
Yeah, who was a relative of Johnny Maldonado. Right?
Yeah, that's what we said on the last show, yeah.
Yeah.
There was 19 guys in that division, so it was really tough. Yeah. Jerry Scalise was sixth.
Did he go on to win the AU America?
I think he won his class. Yeah, I don't think he won the overall.
Okay.
And the middleweights, Charles Glass was the winner that year.
He's one of the most famous trainers.
Yeah. I think Charles used to compete as a light heavyweight, and that year he went down to middleweight, which was a good move because he had that thickness, too, in his upper body, and he would come in really rock hard, just like Chuck Williams did.
And, you know, Charles Glass, I interviewed him when he was competing. He never dieted, he told me.
Yeah, I remember you told me that, yeah.
French fries right up to the contest.
That's unbelievable.
He was once the captain of the gymnastic team at California Berkeley. So in his posing routine, he would do gymnastic moves.
Yeah.
The audience, they don't expect that from a body. Because bodybuilders have, they're stiff and they're muscle bound. And
yeah.
They can't move. And this guy would be doing splits and somersaults and backflips. The audience would go nuts. I mean, they're completely by surprise. And he influenced Flex Wheeler to do it later on.
Oh, okay.
He did that famous pose where he'd flex a double on bicep and grab and go down.
Drop down into a split, yeah.
That he got from Charles Glass.
I didn't know he influenced Flex. I know he was training Flex. And he was
I think told him to do that. He says it would really impress the audience.
Hmm.
Because again, you know how it is. Bodybuilders, this muscle-bound stuff you hear about.
Yeah.
All bodybuilders are stiff and they can't move.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, a lot of the way some of the guys walk around, it does look like they're stiff. I mean, they're walking like...
It
looks like...
Yeah, Charles even did a backflip, right?
He did a backflip.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a real gymnast,
Yeah.
And I think I told you, I ran into him, a couple of years ago at the Fit Expo in L.A., yeah, he was at a booth. I very rarely see him because he trains people very early in the morning at Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
I said, hey, Charles, I got to ask you something. I said, you remember when we did that interview in the 80s? I said, about your diet, and you basically told me you eat whatever you want all the way up to the show. I'm sure now that as an older guy, you've adjusted your diet and you probably – he says, no, I still eat whatever I want.
Wow. Sure enough,
he was still in great shape. Genetic freak that didn't...
Great metabolism, yeah.
He just didn't put on body fat. We're a lucky guy, you know?
And Lindsay McKinney was second. Lindsay was a shorter black bodybuilder, very thick. I think he had, I think he was from Detroit, maybe. Michigan. I think he was from Michigan.
Vaguely remember him, yeah. Vaguely remember him. Very short guy.
I remember he had, eight kids. Remember
eight
the
kids?
Yeah. He used to always say that in all his articles. He had, eight kids.
Wow. Eight kids. Jeez.
And I don't think he ever won his class at the Nationals, but he came really close a couple times. Like this year, he got second.
Yeah, I remember him.
And John Arneda, who you were talking about, Roy Liedemeyer's training partner, protege, he was third.
Right.
And Ernie Santiago was fourth from Hawaii. Remember Ernie?
Santiago from Hawaii, yeah. He used to come to Gold's. I spoke to him a couple of times.
Yeah.
I remember, I met him. I think Bob Jotkowitz, of all people, introduced me to him.
Oh, okay.
Then a couple of years later, he came back to Goals, and I went up to him and said, hey, Ernie, how you doing? And he says, have we met? He had no recollection of ever talking to me.
Oh.
I said, yeah, we spoke a couple of years ago and this and that,
Well, he did something amazing that year because he won the USA overall as a middleweight in 83.
Right.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, very rarely does a middleweight win a national level contest, overall.
He had a very nice physique. Good physique.
Yeah, he was very ripped all the time, really rock hard.
Yeah, no body fat, that's true.
like not the greatest symmetry I remember, but really, really rock hard. And the lightweight was Jesse Lujan. Remember him?
Vaguely, yeah.
I think he was a doctor.
Yes, okay. All right, I think I do remember him, yeah. Yeah.
And Dean Tornabene was second.
Dean, yeah, yeah, I knew him.
Yeah. I think Dean eventually went on to win his class at the National, but not this year.
Right.
So that was a great National. I think people still talk about it today, especially that heavyweight class, you know.
Oh, it's tremendous. Those guys were really in shape.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branum for spending all his time talking about these contests with us. We do this every year, and I really appreciate Jerry's assistance in helping me go over the end of the year review that we do. So next week, we will have part two of 1983, where Jerry and I will talk, of course, about the Mr. Olympia contest that Samir Banute won. And we'll also talk about the other top shows like the 1983 Night of the Champions, and the Arnold Classic had not started yet, so that was not around, but they had a 1983 Pro World competition. Muhammad Makawe won the Pro World, and Lee Haney won his first contest at the Night of the Champions. So we got a lot to talk about next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. If you have any questions or emails you want to send me, you can send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will read them on the air next week. And again, check out Jerry's newsletter, AppliedMetabolics.com. I have the link below, and also any links about training and nutrition programs. If you're interested in those, I have those links below as well. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening to the show. And we will be back next week with another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Until then, train hard, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.